This is the weekly podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. Welcome to the December 14th, 2012 podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. I'm Natalie Pynchon. Topics covered in this podcast are pituitary surgery, functional neurosurgery, traumatic brain injury, surgical technique, and pain. Value of endoscopy for maximizing tumor removal in endonasal transphenoidal pituitary adenoma surgery. A clinical article by Nancy McLaughlin and colleagues. In this study, the authors assessed the value of endoscopic visualization for finding and removing residual adenoma after initial maximal removal with microscopic visualization. Of 140 patients, 69 had endocrine active adenomas and 71 had endocrine inactive adenomas. After maximal microscopic removal, endoscopy revealed residual tumor in 40% of patients, and additional tumor was removed in 36% of these cases. Endoscopy facilitated additional tumor removal in 54% of adenomas measuring 2 centimeters or more in diameter, and in 19% of adenomas measuring less than 2 centimeters in diameter. Notably, additional tumor removal was achieved in 20% of microadenomas. Overall, 91% of endocrine inactive tumors were gross totally or near totally resected. 70% of endocrine active adenomas had early remission. Residual tumor removed with endoscopy was typically found in the suprasellar space and folds of the collapsed diaphragma cella or along the medial cavernous sinus. These findings strongly suggest that panoramic visualization of the endoscope facilitates more complete tumor removal than is possible with the microscope alone. The endoscopic visual advantage was most apparent with larger macroadenomas, but was also seen with 1 in 5 microadenomas. These findings should provide a further impetus for pituitary surgeons to use an endoscope-assisted or fully endoscopic tumor removal technique. Limbic system surgery for treatment refractory obsessive-compulsive disorder, a prospective long-term follow-up of 64 patients. A clinical article by Samir Sheth and co-authors. Obsessive-compulsive disorder, or OCD, is a common and disabling psychiatric illness. Unfortunately, in a significant proportion of patients with OCD, the illness is refractory to conventional therapies. For decades, patients with severe treatment-resistant OCD have been treated with stereotactic limbic system lesions. One such therapy, the dorsal anterior cingulotomy, was developed by Dr. Thomas Ballantyne at the Massachusetts General Hospital in the 1960s and is still in use today. In this study, the authors present their long-term results describing the efficacy and durability of limbic system surgery for OCD. The authors identified 64 consecutive patients who underwent cingulotomy for refractory OCD at the Massachusetts General Hospital between 1989 and 2009. These patients had been evaluated as candidates for the procedure by a multidisciplinary team consisting of psychiatrists, neurologists, and neurosurgeons. Criteria for candidacy included severe OCD and the failure of a number of conventional pharmacological and behavioral therapies. After 1 year, 35% of patients demonstrated a full response, 7% were partial responders. By 5 years, 47% of patients demonstrated a full response, and 22% were partial responders. In addition, comorbid symptoms of depression had decreased by 17% at the most recent follow-up. Limbic system surgery, based on initial cingulotomy, thus offers a durable and effective treatment option for appropriately selected patients with severe treatment refractory OCD. Volume outcome relationship in neurotrauma care. A clinical article by Rutledge Carter Clement and co-workers. Volume outcome relationships have been documented in both neurosurgery and trauma care and have shaped regionalization policies to optimize patient outcomes. Several authors have also examined the correlation between patient volume and cost of care, with mixed results. Authors of the current study investigated the volume-outcome relationship and volume-cost relationship in the treatment of common intracranial injuries. They hypothesized that centers that do not regularly treat these types of head-injured patients would have increased mortality rates. They performed a cross-sectional cohort study of patients with neurological trauma. Patients with subdural, subarachnoid, and extradural hemorrhage were identified. In their primary analysis, they tested the association between facilities' neurotrauma volume and patient survival. They also examined relationships between both volume and discharge status and between volume and cost. In-hospital mortality was 15% for hospitals with the smallest neurotrauma case volume, less than 6 patients per year. Significantly, higher volume facilities had lower mortality rates, between 8 and 10%. For these same groups, there were no statistically significant differences in either the estimated actual cost or the duration of stay. In conclusion, a volume-outcome relationship exists in the treatment of neurotrauma, and a meaningful threshold for significantly improved mortality is 6 cases per year. Emergency and interfacility transport policies based on this threshold might improve national outcomes. Cost of care does not differ significantly with case volume. Merging machines with microsurgery. Clinical experience with NeuroArm. A clinical article by Garnett Roy Sutherland and colleagues. NeuroArm is a cutting-edge, image-guided, teleoperated robotic system developed for neurosurgery. It consists of 2 MR-compatible robotic arms that the surgeon controls from a sensory immersive workstation. This workstation provides sensory feedback that begins to recreate the surgical sensations of sight, sound, and touch. As microsurgical dissection is very dependent on touch, this development allows surgeons to capitalize on their surgical experience while operating with the robot. This combination of human knowledge with mechanical precision and accuracy will eventually lead to surgery on increasingly small scales. NeuroArm includes features such as motion scaling and tremor filters, which may facilitate microsurgery. To date, NeuroArm has been used in 35 cases, with a single adverse event that did not result in patient injury. In response to this event, new safety features were incorporated. The use of NeuroArm resulted in longer OR setup time, but did not significantly impact incision to closure time. NeuroArm has a learning curve of about 20 cases, and to ensure that this learning curve was accounted for, NeuroArm was introduced into surgery in a graded fashion. Based on the author's experience with these 35 cases, they conclude that a robotic workstation could become central to neurosurgical training and procedures. Morphological and clinical risk factors for the rupture of anterior communicating artery aneurysms. A clinical article by Hidetoshi Matsukawa and co-authors. Patients with ruptured anterior communicating artery aneurysms, or ACOA aneurysms, have been noted to have poor neuropsychological outcomes. ACOA aneurysms have accounted for a greater proportion of ruptured than unruptured aneurysm series. A recent study on the natural course of unruptured cerebral aneurysms in a Japanese cohort has also shown that an ACOA aneurysm is more likely to rupture. Thus, investigating factors related to the rupture of ACOA aneurysms is clinically meaningful. Authors of the present study retrospectively reviewed 140 consecutive patients with ACOA aneurysms, dividing the patients into groups with or without aneurysm rupture. They compared the morphological and clinical characteristics of these two patient groups. Multivariate logistic regression analysis revealed that an anterior direction of the aneurysm dome around the ACOA, an aneurysm bleb, and an aneurysm size equal to or greater than 5 millimeters are significantly associated with ACOA aneurysm rupture. The authors might recommend treatment in patients with unruptured ACOA aneurysms that have these morphological characteristics. An analysis of deep vein thrombosis in 1,277 consecutive neurosurgical patients undergoing routine weekly ultrasonography. A clinical article by Akhil Patel and co-workers. Patients requiring neurosurgical intervention are known to be at increased risk for deep vein thrombosis, or DVT, and the subsequent morbidity and mortality it imposes. Pulmonary embolism is the most catastrophic sequela of DVT and is the direct cause of death in 16% of all in-hospital mortalities. The authors analyzed the effectiveness of weekly lower extremity venous duplex ultrasonography in 1,277 patients requiring surgical intervention for cranial or spinal pathology. Their goal was to detect deep vein thromboses and prevent pulmonary emboli. The overall incidence of acute deep vein thrombosis was 2.8%. Of these deep vein thromboses, a statistically significant greater number, 86%, were discovered on admission. Additionally, there were no underlying statistically significant risk factors regarding baseline physical examination, age, ambulatory status, or type of surgery for acute deep vein thrombosis detection in the patient population. The overall incidence of acute symptomatic pulmonary emboli was 0.3%, with a 0% mortality rate. Lower extremity venous duplex ultrasonography performed within 1 week after admission for neurosurgical intervention is effective in screening for acute deep vein thrombosis and initiating treatment to prevent pulmonary embolism, thereby decreasing the overall mortality rate. Routine lower extremity venous duplex ultrasonography performed beyond this time point may not be needed to detect deep vein thromboses and prevent pulmonary emboli unless a change in the patient's physical examination status is appreciated. Nucleus caudalis dorsal root entry zone lesioning for the treatment of anesthesia dolorosa. A case report by Stephen Sandwell and Omar L. Nagar. Deafferentation facial pain, after the resection of a trigeminal neuroma can be difficult to control. This case report describes the long-term relief of deafferentation facial pain achieved by open nucleus caudalis dorsal root entry zone lesioning. After the patient's prior resection of a trigeminal neuroma, he had a loss of sensation in his right V1 and V2 distributions, but also severe pain in these distributions. After 7 years of severe pain, he was referred to the ortho's practice for nucleus caudalis dorsal root entry zone lesioning. Within 7 weeks of dorsal root entry zone lesioning, he was weaned off of opioid medications. The authors detail the operative technique and postoperative course, and they review the literature and evidence base to support both neuroablative and neuromodulatory approaches for such a patient. Although neurostimulation is an improving technology and helpful in many pain disorders, the authors believe that currently the best supported treatment of medically intractable facial anesthesia dolorosa is with lesioning the second-order neurons of the nucleus caudalis. Thank you for listening to the Journal of Neurosurgery. To listen to more of our podcasts, please visit us at www.thejns.org. You can also follow the Journal of Neurosurgery Publishing Group on Twitter and now also on Facebook.